Hey guys, welcome to episode 62 of the JV Club with Christy Stratton Mann. As I record this intro, because this is the time that I have to record it, Katie has not yet futzed with the audio. And although I think we've solved the problem of that sort of tinny sound, maybe I was so enthused to have Christy on the podcast that I didn't notice that she was kind of lowering the microphone too far or not speaking into it directly enough so that there's a lot of this kind of sound happening. But hopefully Katie's going to be able to go through and listen to the episode and punch it up as needed. I'd like to apologize for Christy and to my listeners if that doesn't necessarily get as fixed as we would like it to be. I think the intention to fix it is there. But on the off chance that it doesn't get fixed, I love apologizing for things, so I apologize if it isn't fixed. I apologize for this long rant about it if it is fixed. So I've managed to apologize twice there. I think I can squeeze in one more apology for this short intro, and that is to people that I am not shouting out yet because I am behind. I do want to shout out these people, OJC, who enjoyed the Kara, Santa Maria episode, The Adventures Of, who votes for The Janitors. I am fond of The Janitors, guys. I still like it. Like, I know Hannah W. was saying it would be fun to have like a Letterman's jacket, like a jacket made that says The Janitors on the back. That would be really funny. But some people don't love The Janitors. And then also the suggestion of Cubs, like JV Cubs, rendering me Mama Bear, although I don't know that I'm any more mature or wise than the listeners, I was pretty charmed by that one too. So all I can say is I think we're no further in the direction of actually concluding a name anytime soon. I'm terrible at this stuff. I just need like a boss who's going to say, I can't believe I just wished for someone to be in charge of me. I guess I just wish that like someone would go, all right, this is what it's going to be. I'm terrible at it and I'm really enjoying all the suggestions, but I think we're closing in. I want to thank Taryn and Rob S., Joseph for turning me on to The Year of Billy Joel. You guys can check that out. I think there's a posting for it on Facebook. Jessica McSee, who likes The Janitors. Nene, who enjoyed the Sarah Silverman episode. Mrs. Davenport, who was very on board for the Soda Stream. I got to get into the Soda Stream. You know, Abe Foreman Greenwald and Lin Chen, for those of you who listened to Lin Chen's episode, they have a Soda Stream, and I've been invited over to come and try it. So I am going to do that, and I will report back. EHRR, Bryce M., Charles D., Burnt, who gave me an example of Regina Spektor doing a vocal sound effects, not unlike Billy Joel. I really enjoyed that. Thank you for that. Harvey W., Stephanie, who suggested the Varnicles, like people who cling to the podcast like they're barnacles. I found that utterly charming as well. See, this is what happens. If I close down the voting, or if I close down the suggestions, we'll never get great suggestions like the Varnicles. That's why I can't make any kind of a decision. Dessa is a new listener. I want to welcome her in. Flavia, hello to you in Melbourne. And I did reach out to Lennon Parham. I do want her to do the podcast. She wants to do it. It's just been a scheduling thing. So hopefully that'll all work out. Matt B., you know I loved your email, and I love the idea of doing an episode that's really specifically about parenting and parenting young children. So that's in my mind and percolating. Roma P., thanks for your marvelous email. And I want to thank everybody on Facebook who's been weighing in on The Janitors and other. A lot of KCW love on the Nerdist page and on the Facebook page. I'm not shouting you out individually because I am not fully caught up, but I hope to get that on the next intro. I think that's it, guys. I'm going to keep it kind of short. I can't believe that at this point a 4-minute intro is considered short for me. But I do hope that you enjoy the episode, and I'll talk to you soon. Hey guys, I'm recording a very special emergency broadcast. I wish there was no reason for me to have to do this. Having said that, I do feel like it's kind of exciting to have to do an emergency broadcast. But again, if I could go back and not have to do this emergency broadcast, I would in a New York second. As many of you know who have already downloaded the episode for this week, there were some very terrible audio issues. I didn't know how serious they were when I recorded the intro, and I feel terrible that I pinned it on Christy. Clearly, it was not just a matter of like holding the microphone far away. There are times when the audio is so gone that there's no reason for it. It had to have been a mic or cable unbelievable problem that just wasn't showing up on the tracking of my GarageBand program. So because I do keep that open and I watch it while I'm recording, since we don't have a producer on site. So anyway, I just want to apologize to Chrissy again for this happening. And the really good news is, guys, that half of the episode is terrific and has no problem with the sound. And so we're going to keep that half. But Chrissy and I are going to record a new first half today. So what I encourage you strongly to do, I can't make you do it, but I certainly strongly encourage you to do, is go ahead and delete the episode that downloaded already. And just hang tight, because you're not going to miss out on anything. You're going to get a great new episode with Chrissy that is infinitely more listenable and still chock full of delightful tales. So please bear with us. And again, I just really appreciate your understanding. I think I've been very lucky that more of this stuff hasn't happened, but I certainly feel completely sick to my stomach that it happened with Chrissy. So I'm very excited to remedy the situation, and I appreciate your support, guys. And I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I've never been more nervous about the quality of the audio or something going horribly wrong. I feel like I'm going to be like, keep talking, but my eyes are just going to be glued to the screen. We just did a quick test, but
I think we got it.
If not, this is going to be hilarious.
I know, right?
We'll both just have a complete nervous breakdown. We'll be like laughing on the floor, rolling around, but also tears. The dog won't know what to do. He'll probably eat it. He'll probably feast on our flesh.
Okay.
Or be around the corner
from. Well, that's a way to go.
Yeah, it's just a weird Varney-centric apocalypse. But Chrissy Stratton, man, thank you. First of all, let me just get out another public apology. I'm so ashamed. I'm perplexed about what happened. I'm bitter.
Well, you know what? Maybe it was like my dental work was bouncing off of something metal wise, and it just, I don't know,
but I'm truly horrified. And I have specifically, like, there's a way for me to look at both of our tracks at the same time, but also specifically enlarged at your track. So I'm staring also, like, she's laughing. There's the slashes showing that the laughing is registering. So we're gonna do this, because this is the exact day that the episode aired, and I didn't know, and I already even released on iTunes a little like emergency broadcast system notice. Ooh. That we were pulling the episode. I made it very dramatic. It's possible that 99% of my listeners are just fine, and they aren't like, oh, the drove, the bustle, hustle and bustle. Let's talk about this at the water cooler. It made me feel really important but I really wish the circumstances were different, such that I would not have had to do it. But I applaud and embrace your willingness to
absolutely
pop back over.
Anytime I get an opportunity to talk about stories from high school and younger, I jump at it.
Okay, well,
I'm all about it.
I loved your
stories.
It's
my brand.
It is your brand, and it should be your brand, because you have way better stories than I do. I mean, like, I just don't have...
Honey, you're pretty.
Oh, stop it. When I look at pictures of myself from that era, I don't know that you could argue that then.
Okay. There's a natural incandescent beauty going on, I'm just saying.
That is unnatural. That is a makeup that causes you to shimmer that I have on my face right now. But like, this is like one of the stories that you told that I want to make sure to, like, I just want to talk about with you again, is this idea of like, I know that I'm jumping right into high school, but I was listening to this episode. It's very meta, because now I'm listening to an episode that I then want to make sure to recapture certain moments. But will you tell me about that guy, Frank?
Oh, yes. Well, to explain high school.
Yeah.
I I don't remember what I said or decided. Okay. In middle school, like, I had worked my way up.
Yeah.
On awards day, I won a bunch of academic awards. I was a spirit leader. We couldn't
that
call...
That sounds almost like you performed seances.
Well, we kind of did for the football team. Well, we couldn't call them cheerleaders for some legal reason.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's so funny.
And, I didn't tell the story, but... okay, so there was this woman, her name is Miss Dilworth, and she was amazing. She came to Monig Middle School and shook things up. Young, attractive, black. I don't know that we had any other black teachers in that school, maybe a couple. But she was so kind to me, and she saw that I kept running for offices and not getting them.
And guys, by the way, this is in Fort Worth, Texas, yes. Just so you know.
And she decided she wanted to start a cheerleading squad, and she approached me and she said, I want to do this and I want to make you the captain.
She singled you out?
Yes.
Just like that?
Oh my gosh.
Because you had so much spirit, natural spirit.
Well, she knew that I would be able to lead.
And she probably saw the hunger.
Oh gosh, the hunger was everything.
Yeah.
And so she said, I need you to help me pick out the other girls.
Oh my God, you really were top of the heap.
Right.
In
okay.
Middle
well,
school.
And so, boy, that day at that meeting was like one of the highlights of my life. I've never.
Don't you dare say you peaked in middle school. It's bad enough when people peak in.
I may have. But okay, so that wasn't really like we didn't do real full on, you know, but we had cheerleading skirts and megaphones.
And when you say you didn't do full on, do you mean like you didn't have like, you weren't doing like a human pyramid or were you
correct.
Not doing like very specific cheers that like rhymed and stuff or?
I do remember one specific cheer. It went like this. Go back, go back, go back to the woods because you haven't got the goods. And it went on from there. But Miss Dilworth wanted
one.
To pull it because she thought it might be a little racist.
Because I guess you're saying that the people that they're playing against are like...
Back in the woods.
Backwoods people.
And that, right? I don't know. But
toothless, overalls with like one overall strap hanging down because right. They're not smart. They're only smart enough to put one up and then they've forgotten by the time it's time for them to put up the
correct.
Other.
Correct. And so
fair.
We dropped that one. I mean, I wasn't going to fight her on it. You know, she was the sponsor. She knew best. So that year was amazing and awesome. And
middle school for you ended in fifth grade or sixth grade?
Eighth
grade.
So
okay.
It was sixth, seventh,
okay.
And eighth.
All right, all right.
Then in high school, well, you try out for cheerleading the end of your eighth grade year. And I knew, like, Arlington Heights High School was very, like, popularity-based. And back then, you know, I just automatically wanted that. I can't, you know, when I wrote a screenplay with this friend of mine, and he said, did you want... popularity to get the guys? Do you want the guys to be popular? I'm like, I wanted them both. I wanted right. that. I don't know what that was. I knew that those people got treated specially and got more pictures in the yearbooks and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got more dates, sure. They didn't have to sit home or go to the Cyndi Lauper concert during homecoming.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because it almost seems to me like you were ambitious and you were going to be ambitious about whatever, like at the age you were in, you sort of like the thing it makes sense to be ambitious about is what is all around you. And
yes.
what of course you're going to pick. I mean, if you were at a different school where it was like really important to be this, or if you were older, but you had the same ambition, maybe it would be different. But like, if you're looking at what's right in front of you going, what is the highest point of this particular environment?
Yes.
And I guess that should be my goal, right?
Right.
You know?
And this was what's so interesting about cheerleading is, I took gymnastics when I was young and I just wasn't very good at it. And I wasn't great. So when I didn't make it that freshman year, and I can't tell you the sobs. Year after year, it was 3 years. Sobbing.
I can't believe that you went
sobbing.
Back every year.
Every year.
It's so amazing to me. I just don't think I could have done it.
And it's interesting because I've developed a sense of self-awareness at this point in my life. And I don't know. I mean, I had that American Idol, you know, I'm a great singer thing about me back then. I remember in elementary school when we had the Dance-O-Rama, There was this, the Sweet Georgia Brown routine that I performed. You auditioned
for each.
So
Dancerama was like a festival of dance?
Oh, yeah. That's what it was. But yeah, you auditioned for each dance. But the thing about that was that there was a solo in Sweet Georgia Brown, a tap solo. Now, I didn't know how to tap, but I'm like, okay, I'll try out for that. The girl who was this expert tapper, her name was Brooke Barton, I think. She helped me. She coached me. And like, she's excellent. Like, how am I even going to just beat her?
Yeah.
But I still did it. I still tried out in my stupid little routine that she kind of helped me with. And of course, she just does this whole jig and is amazing and, you know, got to do the solo, of course, not me. But I kind of had a non... You know, like, I can't tumble. I can jump okay. I mean, I did have sass.
Yeah.
And I could really facial express.
I wish you could have seen what Christine just did.
I mean, that, no one can do that like me.
Yeah.
Nobody. And I had a good, powerful yelling voice.
Uh-huh.
I was, you know, heavier, but I didn't think that was going
to
keep me.
I love that
me...
you had the chutzpah. I want to throw that word in as a shiksa. I want to throw that word in, but it really is the sort of like, I love, so many of us are so paralyzed by feelings of self-doubt and feelings of what, like, I really wanted to have the why not me perspective, but mm-hmm. I didn't. I had more of the, and I did all right, you know? But I think I was still paralyzed by a fear of like anything that I was naturally good at that I had come to learn from a very early age I was naturally good at felt very safe for me. Mm. But if it was something that I got rejected on or whatever, I would just like shrink away. And so this idea of like, yeah, she's a better tapper, but like what? Why not me? Maybe it could be me.
Maybe me.
I think so many of us want that. So many of us want to have that sort of like shrug like a, hey, could be, why not give it a shot?
Nah.
And I really admire that.
Well, thank you.
I really do.
I think I go into it in the second half of our series. But so to get to your thing. So I really wanted to be popular. I ran for student council every year and I did all this stuff. And there was this group that we called the Get Along Gang.
Now, they called themselves that or someone else kind
they
of described
call, it? I think they called it, they coined that themselves.
The wherewithal
because
of
there was
a
cartoon
name.
Or something at the time.
That sounds familiar.
Okay. And so they were the Get Along Gang. And oh my God, just to get invited to those parties, it really was everything to me. Everything. And there was this one guy, and his name was Frank. And now let me explain to you, like, if I'd have just not cared, I think I would have been largely left alone. I know I mentioned, and I don't know, I think it was in the, but that in middle school, I would go into the bathroom and, you know, girls would say, you know, Chrissy Stratton is a scum. And I wasn't the only one. I wasn't the only scum. But that's pretty bad.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, so anyway, I went from a scum.
It's not even like a bitch, because a bitch implies that like you make mean choices or something.
Right. And you're
this
powerful.
This is just like you're nothing.
You're nothing.
You're gross nothing.
Right. But I was able to rise to the queen of the land. Yeah. Then I had to start over again. It was awful. Okay. So if I had not been such a wannabe, I think I'd have been left alone. Okay. Well, this one member of the Get Along Gang in government, his thing, which I think is the worst thing that you could do to a high school girl, is to accuse them of farting. And he did this more than once.
That's the worst
where
thing.
I'd walk in and be like, Christy farted. And then I'm like, no, I didn't fart. And of course, when you're so defensive like that,
yeah,
everyone thinks you farted.
It's basically the perfect con.
It is.
Yeah. There's nothing you can do.
Except, well, so he did this a couple of times, you know, and I'm like, bleh. And I finally had to ask his girlfriend if she would talk to him to tell him to lay off a little bit. Because I needed every moment of everything I could get. Like, just to be also accused of a farter on top of everything else was really... And you know what? I didn't eat a single vegetable until I was 30. So believe me, I wasn't farting.
Yeah. Everyone knows that's what causes farts. By and large. I mean, that's just so... Again, it's like the fact that you... I don't know. It's just a very specific type of confidence to be able to get, like, what was your family life like in terms of like, did your mom make you like, did she make you feel like anything was possible or like,
yes,
you're so special that like, don't take guff from anybody because, or, you know, they'll turn it around for them or whatever, because I just don't know where that comes from.
You know, it's interesting because I think there's a little bit of that. I never felt growing up that there was anything I couldn't do. In fact, my mom believed in me so much. In kindergarten, she took me to the talent show auditions with nothing prepared. I don't know what... Like, I kept seeing kid after kid get up on stage and have these specific routines or, like, playing the flute. Oh, and I'm like, Mom, what am I going to do?
Oh, that's amazing.
When my name is called...
What did you do?
We left. I mean, I think it dawned on her that, oh,
that
maybe,
is precious.
Yeah.
And I think, I do want to establish too, that you are an only child, as am I.
Yes.
And that your parents split when you were so young that you don't even remember that much, and that you lived with your mom, but you guys kind of moved around a lot, which is why you kind of had to keep like doing that tap dance, that sort of proverbial tap dance over and over again for people.
And I don't know that I ever... expressed, like, I don't know that I ever told her, like, oh, I was called a scum and not that I don't think I could have, I just didn't. I kept a lot of that in, and I have to say, it's so interesting thinking about parenting today. Like, if my kid, who is 3 and a half, if he came to me and said, Mommy, I don't like school, I don't want to go back, I would pull him out tomorrow.
Yeah.
And what I loved is that, I mean, I think at a certain point she knew I hated it. I'm like, can we move to Dallas? Can we just move to Dallas? And because she, but
yeah, I don't
she,
think that many kids are asking to move. You know what I mean? I think it's pretty unusual.
And we didn't. And I have to tell you, I am so grateful that I was so miserable. Seriously. Like, yeah. I really think it forced me, you know, to do things and it forced me to find, you know, my friends that I ultimately have that I love. Although some of those people that poke fun of me ended up being friends years later.
I'm going to insist that you tell the story of being at the livestock, whatever is.
Well, the Fort Worth Fat Stock Show and Rodeo is...
Did you say the Fat Stock
Show? Oh, it's called the Fat Stock Show.
I don't remember you saying Fat Stock Show.
I must have forgotten that.
Oh my gosh, Fat Stock Show.
It's a day that you celebrate livestock, and there's a fair there too.
I mean, that's kind of like a county fair, but...
Yeah.
When you really look at it and think about it, like the combination of like going on rides and also just staring at cows seems so absurd to me.
We got a day off of school to do that.
And in Tucson, there's a rodeo vacation. Same. You get a day off of school for the rodeo. I, to this day, don't know a single person who went to any rodeos on that day. That was just like an excuse to like go to Disneyland or something.
Right.
Like,
but we would go to the Fat Stock Show and just wander around in the barns and watch cattle auctions. Well, this one time, it was, gosh, was it sixth grade, which was maybe my super lowest, my scum point. Tanya Nambranya.
Which is a name I couldn't love
and
more
I gotta
for
tell you,
sounding
she,
like Anna Banna Bobana.
Let me, before I even say the rest of the story, she has been lovely, has reached out to me and been lovely. We were friends in high school. Like, it's so funny how things change. But at the time, she invited me to go with her and Susie Hill to the Fat Stock Show. And I was thrilled. I mean, because at this point, like, I didn't know anyone at that school. So I was thrilled. She was popular. I was going to get to go to the Fat Stock Show with her.
Sweet.
So I arranged for my mom to take us home because we all lived nearby. So I specifically remember we were going on one of those rides that it kind of stays in place, like you're in a car that spins around and then the whole thing spins
like
around.
It's like a Ferris wheel, but instead of like the Ferris wheel, those cars, the individual cars in the Ferris wheel also spin around.
Yes, and it spins at a very high rate of speed.
That really makes me sick to my stomach.
Well, when we got on it, I remember thinking like, oh, I need to pee. And then after this terrifying experience being spun about, I was walking around and I'm like, that's so funny, I don't need to pee anymore. And I made the mistake of sharing that. And Chris Smith at this point had joined us. And he was a boy that was a year older than us.
Mm.
And I think he was sweet on Tanya.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said something and I'm like, yeah, isn't it so weird? I don't need to pee anymore. But looking down at my pants, it wasn't like I had any sort of... I honestly, to this day, I don't know what happened to that.
Was it just like a hot Texas day and it somehow might have been. Like you just dried out?
It's so funny. I always thought
I feel like it's more likely that somehow when you were spinning, it just like discombobulates your organs so much that like, I don't know how pee gets into your bladder. Listen, I've never pretended to be a doctor or any kind of person with medical background, but maybe just like everything gets jostled and so you just don't have to.
So I made the mistake of telling Tanya, like, isn't that weird? I don't need to pee anymore.
So they assumed you peed your pants.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm guessing because the next step was she told Susie, they're like, oh, you guys go to the bathroom. And I went with Susie knowing exactly what was going to happen. Like I knew. And so she goes, let's go to the bathroom. And I'm like, but I don't need to go now. That's the whole thing. And so we go in there and I shut the stall door and I just stand there and I give her plenty of time to leave. And she does. And then I walk out and I call my mom from a payphone. And mind you, I'm in sixth grade. So I'm like 11. Oh. And so I call my mom and she's like, great. And she goes, okay, so you guys meet me. And you know, and I'm like, oh, it's just me. And
but
I don't think I ever told her. No.
Do you think that you were afraid of letting her down? Like that there was some part of you that thought, because I think about that with my dad sometimes. I've said on the podcast before, but that I felt like he had such, it wasn't that his expectations were high of me and that I would crush him or disappoint him if I let him down or that he would be mad at me or something.
Okay.
But somehow I think I felt like I don't ever want him to think of me as anything other than this girl who could do anything. Somehow. Mm. And so I didn't ever, I always felt really weird about telling him about like things that weren't going so hot for me, you know, not mistakes I was making, but just like things that like being hurt by other people or not being that precious to somebody else in someone else's eyes. I feel like I just was like, why would I tell him that? That'll just make him as sad as I am. I'd rather he think of me as like being Supergirl, you know?
It might have been that, but I just think I was so embarrassed. Yeah. When these different things would happen.
Yeah.
I told her later.
But there's a list.
Oh, there's a list. One thing, and I didn't mention this, another thing. I used to go to La Petite Academy. That was my preschool. And.
Ooh la la. Yeah. May I just say.
And I remember my grandmother used to make me these polyester suits.
Oh, bless. My grandma made me clothes too.
Oh, and my mom would never make me wear them, but for some reason on this day, I was wearing the polyester pants and I was wearing a top and a jacket and it was zoo day and it's Texas. And so before we got on the bus to go to the zoo, I take off my jacket, the polyester coat.
So sad.
And there was this boy and I remember nothing about him and he must have been dipping something because he spit on my back.
What?
And it was a big blotch. And I was so embarrassed. I didn't even tell the teachers or anything. I just put on the polyester coat and I went to the zoo in the coat.
Oh, Christy.
And so I told my mom that story later and she was mortified. She's like, why didn't you tell me? Oh, and there was another one. Another one at that preschool. We were all playing with puzzles. And the one I started with was missing a puzzle piece. But you know what? Guess what? I'm pretty clever. I can put a puzzle together with a piece missing.
Right.
So Miss Marcia said, after we'd switched a few times, she goes, who started with this puzzle? And everyone pointed to me. Christy did. And I'm like, I did. She goes, well, where's this puzzle piece? And I'm like, I don't know. It didn't have one when I, you know, and then she goes, okay, well, go find it. So I guess she thought I somehow levitated out of my body and went somewhere else in the building. And yeah. So I'm literally crying, going through box after box, looking for this puzzle piece. And
people?
I told my mom later that story and she's like, oh, I cannot believe. But I mean, I tell all these crazy old stories, but it just, there was something in me that just didn't, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed. I didn't want people to know that I was the kind of girl that could get spit on at the daycare center.
So sad. How dare he?
I know.
It's interesting though, because I think that a lot of us start losing the specific memories about like times of our lives that early on. And so in some really fucked up way, it almost seems like it was a blessing that you had these scarring incidents happen in a different way, because as a writer too, right?
Yes.
I mean, you're just you're able to draw. I mean, I think I know a lot of people, myself included, who would like, I would give up a lot to be able to like really hold on to those memories, because it starts to freak me out when I can't remember stuff. You know, it starts to freak me out when I'm like, I know some bad stuff. I kind of can't remember. You know what I mean? To just like, to the way that you tell them, it feels like it was yesterday.
Honestly, though, I think it has so enhanced my, I think is the reason I became a writer. And this show Awkward that I write for, it's high school. And although it's Lauren Unerick, the showrunner, it's her baby and it's her, but a lot of times we'll relate stories of our own, you know, foibles.
Sure.
And incorporate them. And I am so grateful that I can like that, get right back there.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing.
So from what you're describing, like, I guess what I'm trying to picture is where boys fit in middle school, because you were able to sort of rise up through the ranks, and did that deliver any romance for you? And then again, like sliding back down the ladder and starting back over in high school, what was it like in both of those situations?
Really dire.
Did you have a lot of crushes?
Oh my gosh.
It seems like you would, because you had all this enthusiasm. You had a real joie de vivre.
Oh, I did.
And so I imagine that it's like everything is like, oh, this and oh, that.
And I was really into rock music of the day. And I would get really into radio. And I was the only girl that the guys could talk to about that kind of stuff. But I still wasn't, you know.
What were those other girls doing that they weren't into, like? And give me some examples of bands.
Oh, like in the 80s, I was into, you know, Led Zeppelin or Bad Company or Dire Straits.
Def Leppard.
Yes. The Cars, of course. But I wasn't really that into like Rick Springfield, even though I appreciated him as an artist.
You probably gave him the credit he was actually due instead of what everyone else ascribed to him, because you were busy really enjoying True Musicians.
I mean, I had records by, I liked the Boomtown Rats. I liked Twisted Sister.
Okay, so you are naming a lot of bands where I can imagine that like a lot of the girls wouldn't have, you know, known how to talk their way around that at all.
Right.
And a subject that they wouldn't have known, and you did. So that's enticing.
Or they would listen to the pop stations, and I was listening to, there used to be a format called AOR, Album Oriented Rock, and they would play just any track from the album, and I just got so into that, because albums, you know, used to be such a different thing than they are today.
Yeah.
But so in middle school, I think I might have managed to get a date to one of the homecoming dances by the time I was in eighth grade. I think so. But
did you ever set your mind on a guy the same way you set your mind on these other things?
Yes. And rarely did that come true. I know we
like
talked about
dancing.
Yeah. Like some of these dreams don't come true, Janet. But there was this boy. His name was Greg, and I met him when I was in the seventh grade, and he was a freshman in high school. And my friend Susie and I, on three-way calling, we were calling this boy she liked, Ed, on the phone. And
were you going to talk to him, or were you going to? Because I did a lot of three-way calling where one of you would stay silent. You know, it was like opportunity to spy on conversations. And
you know. I feel like that's was never, I never participated in that.
I think I use that for that most of all. Like that this girl would be like, I can't tell if he likes me. Let's three-way call him. You don't say anything. I'll have a whole conversation. At the end, we can analyze it together. And I'd be like, 100% on board.
Oh, you know, it's funny. I don't think I ever did that. Maybe because I was afraid of what the outcome would be.
Right.
Maybe. But it was, we were going to talk to Ed because she was crushing on him. And we weren't even together. We were in two different, of course, with a three-way. And he just randomly put this kid, Greg, on the phone, and we ended up, the three of us.
This is so typical. That, like, he would be like, here, talk to these girls.
Talk to them from Greg. And he had this very low, kind of slow voice that was very sexy, even for however else, he's 14, whatever.
14.
Yeah, and so we ended up talking all night, and I remember my mom getting
up. Literally all night.
Oh, yeah, all night. My mom woke up and came into the kitchen and was like, what are you doing on the phone? And she flipped out. And so I had to hang up as if...
Which I guess could be worse. It's not like she came in and you were doing a line of cocaine.
Right. Correct.
At age 12.
And so we, from then and into high school, you know, he was this bad boy. And
did he go to that high school? Same high school?
He did.
Okay.
And he was kind of on the fringe. Like, I don't know if he dealt drugs then. He did as an adult, but I don't know if he... But he was very...
What did he look like?
I know he was tall, like, you know, and... tall and not skinny, but not big, but and he had this curly hair, was permed at one point.
I can't.
He kind of had big.
I don't know if I've ever known a single guy who got a perm. I'm so impressed that he just went ahead and permed it. Yeah. Was that more common than I think?
I don't think so. and he
I guess
had those,
he knew he had the goods.
And I think
he didn't have to go back to the woods. Sorry, that just came out.
And that was pretty good. I think I described him last time as it kind of looks like Macklemore in the face.
Okay. Macklemore is a musician, for those of you for some reason don't know that.
Oh,
you just got lost. I just in got the lost image in Macklemore's of Macklemore.
Face. And so, like in high school, we would occasionally see one another, and I'd check in with him. But like in that middle school 2 years, I remember we would talk on the phone all the time, and he just represented this other. Like we'd go to concerts, and he, I think, saw more in me than anyone else did. And so I have to give him credit for that. Like he saw me the way I wanted to be seen. Mm, and
great way of putting it.
Yeah. And I very much appreciated that. I mean, he's been a train wreck ever since, unfortunately. But I, you know, he was my first love. And
this feels like a great screenplay. That's just the story about that guy and sort of like the bittersweetness of feeling
so
recognized.
Funny.
It feels very like Jenna Malone could have been in it when she was in high school. Like that there's a sort of like slow sexiness to this guy who's not giving you that side of himself, at least not yet, but like that you feel acknowledged and recognized.
Yes.
Like a part of your personality recognized in a way that you didn't get from anyone else. That's so special.
Well,
and how influential that must have been on you in turn. You
yes,
know?
And I think I mentioned this last time, but I would say other than my family, he has had more to do with who I became than anybody else. I would say that. I could say that with certainty.
Yeah. Idea of that? Or is he too busy like peddling smack?
It's I don't know. It's very complicated. But I mean, I will say this. He did leave me at the Dire Straits concert in Dallas.
Oh, that's not good.
He thought I'd somehow gotten a ride with someone else. And because I had him take me because I didn't have a car and I'd camped out for those tickets. So I had one like second row seat and then one like 20th row. So that's how we were separated in the first place.
Oh, that stinks.
And well, that's how you get the better tickets when you camp out. You get them two separate. Oh, believe me, that was a whole thing. I mean, I've slept on the Sears lawn. Like I used to do that all the time.
I'm pleased that nothing bad happened to you under those circumstances. I never did that. And I did a lot of really stupid stuff, but it just seems like somebody could have just whisked you away.
Yeah. I mean, usually there were other people there. I mean, usually they were much older, but I never felt unsafe, except the one time. And mind you, this is in the 80s, and it was the Moody Blues, and I was the only one there in line for hours.
I feel like that's appropriate.
Hours.
Because they didn't deserve a line for the Moody Blues.
Hours. And
did you get creeped out when that was happening, or were you just like a kid who has no sense of their own mortality?
Yeah,
because I probably wouldn't have been creeped out. Actually, I probably would have been like, I'm fine.
No, I was kind of I was all right.
Was it worth it? Was the concert worth it? The camp out?
Yeah, they were pretty good.
All right.
It started my trend of being the youngest person at every concert I go to. But okay, so he, I guess, because there was no cell phones back in the day, he thought because we had this meeting point. And I went to the meeting point, but he wasn't there. So I went back thinking like, oh, well, maybe he's in the front. I don't remember what. And then by the time I came back, his car was gone. And I'm 15 in downtown Dallas, which is about a 45-minute drive.
And that's the big city from Fort Worth.
And there were these drunk med school students. I say med school students because they were wearing scrubs. So I don't know if they were... I don't remember, because you know that was kind of trendy. I don't know about you, but that
no,
was at the time.
No, I do feel like I remember people wearing scrubs. God, it is crazy what comes through the trend chain.
Yeah, and I couldn't call my parents because they'd never let me go to another concert again.
Yeah.
So I got a ride with these strangers. And I remember getting in the back of the car and buckling my seatbelt. And this is before that was popular. And they got pulled over by the cops right in front of my father's house. And I kind of opened the door and I asked the cops, like, oh, can I go in? And they let me. And I ran in.
Oh, my God. Over a Moody Blues concert.
Oh, no, that one was Dire Straits.
Oh, sorry.
I sidetracked my camping out.
I forgot because I was thinking again about camping out.
But I somehow forgave him and still loved him after that.
All right. Well, I have to tell you, based on everything you've told me, that's not a surprise. How long So how long total was Greg in the picture for you in some iteration?
4 years. 2 years in middle school and then two years in high school.
In the time when you were kind of working your way up in high school and stuff, did he ever say to you like, hey, I'm going to bring up an example from when we recorded before, but like, hey, maybe don't wear pantyhose that have a control top. Like, did he give you any indispensable advice that you should have?
No.
That you could have known?
No. He always thought I should, you know, not be so uptight, but he never weighed in on any of those things. I think, too, I kind of saw him with, you know,
yeah,
those eyes that have hearts in them.
I'm sure he loved that. You basically gave him the twinkly looking at Davy Jones in the Monkees look.
Totes.
And I know that my younger listeners resent every one of these references because so often I do get the occasional email from someone who's like, I love your podcast. Even though a lot of the time I have no idea who anyone's talking about.
And what's so interesting is
Led Zeppelin is not our era. No, I just know of them because Bob Dylan was not in the 80s. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I'm aware of that has nothing to do with my upbringing.
Right.
That there's stuff I found out about. Like, I didn't listen to Fleetwood Mac at all until like a few years ago. And then I was hey, these guys are pretty good. I mean, I had an awareness of them, but I didn't like dive in. So
if only they had some way, like something they could type letters in that would bring up some photos.
I just did someone else's podcast and he was like, there's no excuse. He teaches. And he's like, there's no excuse. He wouldn't accept it. He was like, there's no excuse for someone who doesn't know like certain references, because there's just like, there's too much out there that's like in your face all the time that's informing you about that stuff. But,
and you know, I think it might be just different. And then like when we were younger, it was fun to be older. Like all I wanted was to have all the older references and be,
yeah.
And it's just a different world. I'm not saying it's better or worse, but I think that even coming up as a writer, when people said something that you didn't know, you went home and you asked people about it or whatever. And I just think it's, you know, I don't know why that is. I don't know. But it's just, it's a different thing. We wanted to be older and now everyone wants to be younger.
Yeah.
I find that so interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
For those of you who are in your 20s and teens, like, do you have a sense of that? Do you feel like it's not that cool to know about like stuff that came before you as it is to know about what's going on right now or like what kids even younger than you are into? I'd be curious to hear, because maybe that's a generational, maybe it's generational, and maybe it's just something that we all feel as we age, like that,
right.
We all feel.
Oh, perhaps. You know?
I'm always curious about that.
And I always reference, like, when we grew up, there were Bugs Bunny cartoons were very popular, and they were always these movie stars likenesses in them that I had no idea.
That's a good point.
I still haven't seen a Jimmy Cagney movie, but I know
me
who
neither.
He is because of Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
And true, I did prefer the ones where like he went to Mars and stuff over the ones with the, so I
it's
get
true.
That.
Yeah. That's, they're more perennial somehow if they're not making fun of like a very specific time and place, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, but that's a good point about like the classics and the movies and stuff, because there are, you know, I mean, listen, I just sat in a room with Danny Gould and Greg Barron, and Jonah Ray's younger than me, but we just recorded for Dana's podcast, and they, in the span of like 30 minutes, dropped like four names. I had no idea who they were talking
really?
About.
Really?
But I got to say, it was actually enjoyable, because now I feel more like the person who's like, what do you mean you've never heard of? I feel I say that now, and I never used to have to say that. And so now I say it, and it made me feel super young to be sitting there and being like, I don't know who that is. I'm just a baby. Maybe we do want to be younger, maybe I just said that.
Yeah,
like maybe I just said the truth.
I don't know. I want to physically be younger but still have the mental capacity that I have now, because I was not, and I think I mentioned this before, like I was never a wunderkind. I was not the you know, the everything for me takes time. Everything.
Yeah. I just appreciate that's yeah. Do you remember knowing that from a really young age? Like, do you remember thinking practice makes perfect?
Well,
or?
I wanted to be that person, like the you know, first female to win an Oscar at directing. Or I wanted to be, you know, on SNL. Or I wanted to be these things that, like, But at 20, like I want, but I know, like at 20, and believe me, I work with some young people who are so far more talented than I was at that age, but I just didn't have it. I didn't have anything to say. I would just, my opinions were parroted from other things that I had heard.
Don't you think that's so true for most people?
I don't know. There are people that are so young, you know, I don't know. Like Gary Newman, for instance. Do you know who he is? He wrote Him and My Car. He wrote that song when he's like 19.
I'm just saying.
Now, like it or not.
Yeah.
It's a song that is going to far outlive us. It'll be the Cockroaches and that song. And I do happen to like it because I think it's very interesting and fun to listen to and whatnot. And I always, you know, I thought I was just going to do something, but I didn't know what it was. Mm. And I think the minute I started focusing on and following the open doors, and I know I mentioned that later, but, you know, then things started to become clearer for me. And then, oh, well, this is specifically what I want to do, is instead of like, I could do anything. I could be a director. I could be an actress.
Right.
I could do, blah. But it's really, you know.
It's funny, too, because I don't feel like, I don't know why I'm harping on this so much, but that that is really what sets apart your school experience from mine, which is, I mean, I was definitely bullied at certain eras in my life, and I felt like I knew the things that I was good at, and I think I really stayed away from things I wasn't sure about, because somewhere along the line, really early on for me, I just must have been so afraid of failing for whatever reason that I just didn't want to have to fail to get good at something. And so I always bring this up when I talk about stand-up comedians, especially, that like that is an exercise that I just don't know if I ever, it's like the opposite of everything that my core being as a young person represents, like this idea that you're just gonna be bad a lot, and then you start getting good, and you might like, hopefully you're aware of when that shift starts happening so you can celebrate it and enjoy it. But I have so much respect for people who know they're not going to be great at something right away and who kind of chip away at it, like you with the cheerleading auditions. I swear to God, if I had auditioned once for a cheerleader spot and I didn't get it, I would have been like, well, I'll never do that again.
Really?
I don't
really
think
Janet
so.
Though, you're an actress.
Well, that's now. And and I think a lot of people have that experience too when they get to Hollywood and they're 18 and they were the star of their school play. And, you know, guys, I don't like to go too into like showbiz all the time, because I know we like exploring more diversified stuff. But, you know, there was like, for me, like, I think one of the reasons that I kind of dropped out on theater when I was in college and just gave, it was like, I'm going to pursue something totally different. I don't know that I drew the parallel and the connection in the moment at the time that it was happening in terms of hindsight, but I was in this play. I was in The Merry Wives of Windsor when I was in college. I was like a sophomore in college, and I had done okay. I did pretty well for myself, like in the tiny non-community of theater and of my public school and of this like liberal arts college, this tiny liberal arts college I was going to in Flagstaff. And I was one of the wives. You know, there's three main characters, like four main characters. Well, I guess there's like, you know, the two wives, their two husbands, and then Falstaff, which is the sort of like recurring character in Shakespeare's plays.
Or at least two of them. I know that.
Good old Falstaff. Listen, I'm not saying that I know plays, but, I can come up with clever names that aren't completely literal. It's called The Merry Wives of Windsor. So this girl, Chris, and I were the wives, and then this guy, Gavin, was Falstaff, and then we had our husbands, or maybe one of them's a widow and one of them. So there were these things called Irene Ryan nominations, and they were like college theater award nominations. And I think maybe you went on to compete somewhere else, or there's something like that.
Irene Ryan was Granny on the Beverly Hillbillies.
And I didn't get the nomination. It was like the one wife and the Falstaff character, and then her husband. And I,
Janet,
was horrified. Like I couldn't understand. I was like, but I'm the star. Like Chris and I are the stars of the play. Mm. Why am I, I'm like, I got super, like I felt like I got snubbed, big time snubbed. And I just couldn't understand it. And I think it instilled a fear in me. Like it instilled that fear that we, a lot of us feel we have, which is that voice that's always waiting inside to just say, see, they figured you out. They know how, you know, they know your real value. Someone finally saw through all the smoke and mirrors and saw that you're not good. And I really took that to heart, I think, because when I look at like the next few years of my life, and I mean like seven, I was just not into performing.
Interesting.
And like what really, like from super into it to majoring in it to then like, I guess I have to finish out this degree because I have, you know, all these credits and, but it's all my backstage stuff. So I never performed again at a school. Never. So I mean, look at that. That's like really one thing. So now I've proved it to you. One thing out of all like the great stuff and the lucky stuff and how fortunate I've been and timing has so much to do with all that stuff.
Sure.
All that, of all that stuff, for me to just have that one thing happen and for me to be like, tuck my tail between my legs and just be like, yeah, you shouldn't be doing this.
Girl.
And how long it took to kind of come back around to having someone coax me into being in a sketch group and coax me down to Los Angeles. So here I am on this podcast, and I think people do. Anyone who's listened to the podcast long enough knows that I'm not like, anyway, I rock. But to even get to like that, like how fragile.
Yeah.
And that's why my heart always breaks for, you know, I am such the sucker that watches all the teen movies and the kid movies and understands like those stories about someone like you getting called scum. It hurts me.
Yeah.
Like when I listened to your episode the first time we aired it this morning and it was not good because of the audio, I started crying. I was like, this is so lame. Like, I can't believe how horrified I am by this.
Oh,
I was
honey.
Horrified. With everything else going on in the world, with everything else going on in my life, I still was like, not this. Not the podcast. Not Christy.
Or she's Chesty. Been through so...
Chesty, as Dana Gould and I refer to you as, because he accidentally auto-corrected Christy to Chesty when we were iPhone texting one day. And now we just call you Chesty.
Oh, if that is so
for
funny.
Your voluptuous chest.
Yes, that is exactly what
two
it is, everybody.
Two flat-chested women sitting together right now.
Oh, well, now, so what should we do? Or we'll cut to the next thing? Or we,
I think
what
we
do
can
think?
Cut to the next
okay,
thing.
Let's cut
I will
to the
say
next
that
thing.
We covered the only thing that we didn't cover. And again, guys, thanks for hanging in for this very meta thing where like Christy is now able to talk about future things you're about to hear. Like, I know I talk about this later. You do? Because we were able to save the second half, which I think was invaluable because there's some really great stuff in there. And luckily, we don't have to recreate that. Like, if we lost one half, I'm glad we lost the half that we lost in a sense,
yeah.
Because they were more like stories that you could revisit with me rather than like the MASH game, which we'd have to like somehow make spontaneous again. I'd have to come up with all new categories and stuff.
I know,
so
and I really appreciated
okay.
all the choices too.
I
so
did.
I'm glad.
I had so
I'm
much
glad.
Fun with that particular MASH game that you guys are about to hear. And I also feel like I need to acknowledge the serendipity of Christy knows this, but this wouldn't be possible today had I not, and I'm leaving for New Zealand soon and Christy's busy and has a family and it's staffing season. She's taking all these meetings and stuff. And as it happens, I was supposed to do something on Key and Peele today. And horribly, the campus we were going to shoot on received a bomb threat, which was completely fake. I think it literally was a student who didn't want to take a final. but they canceled the shoot at the last minute to reschedule, possibly even just cancel altogether. And so had this not happened the way that it happened, we wouldn't be able to be sitting here. So for those of you who feel like who listen to the podcast, who are like, Janet, if you're a seeker, look for the signs. I have to say, it just is a lovely, and even if it's nothing but a lovely coincidence, I'm super happy that it just turned out that we both were like, well, here on this exact day it happened that we just yanked the episode and like, I'm going to send this to Katie in 5 minutes and she'll put it back out like less than 24 hours from one to the next. So
awesome.
We did it.
We did it.
And we didn't take no for an answer. Hey, it took more than one time to get it right. That's your world.
That's par for my course.
My world was like, I don't know what my world, my world as a child would have been like, I should stop doing the podcast forever. I should retire from podcasting. Thank God I've got the lesson from you that it's okay. You can do it over and have it be okay.
Yeah.
Cut to us listening to this and the sound is terrible. And then we're rolling on the floor and my dog is feasting on our flesh because it's apocalypse.
The dog is asleep now. Oh,
guys, I welcome you to take a short break if you'd like to. Go get yourself some popcorn. You know what Casey Wilson suggests? Drive yourself to the movie theater, buy yourself some popcorn, but then come home and listen to this podcast because movie popcorn tastes better than microwave popcorn.
Love it.
So here we go with the second half.
But, okay, so high school drudgery, whatever. I find by the time I get to the end of the my junior year, I have a group of friends that I love and that we're, it's great.
And it's not the get along gang.
Well, no, some of the people just lightened up a little, I think, by mm-hmm. the time they were older. And I decided because my homeroom would never elect me in student, or no, I could never get elected on the student council. Like I just couldn't that. But if you ran for an officer, it was a separate election. Like you didn't have to have your whole class vote, or no, your whole class voted, but it was not like they were voting on everyone. They were only voting on a select number of candidates.
Okay.
So I ran for secretary and won. And on that same day was cheerleading tryouts. And that particular year, my fourth year of trying, there were only 13 girls trying out for 12 spots. And luckily, there was one girl that was worse at cheerleading oh, no. than me. And so I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, believe me, it wasn't like my senior year was all sunshine and roses. It wasn't. Yeah. I was, my friend Miriam and I were the only senior cheerleaders not elected onto the homecoming court. But let me tell you this, Janet. Of all my moaning and complaining about all this stuff, and it does really, it's still there yeah, for me more than I think most, but it's part of the reason I've become a writer, and it's great. Like I write for Awkward on MTV for a bunch of teenagers, and it, I can channel.
Yeah. To be able to be so close to those feelings.
Yeah. I mean, they are right there.
I know. I feel the same way. They're so close to the surface.
Right. Now, man. So popularity wasn't a big deal to like you, like what
well,
were you?
No, I mean, it was like,
did you hold high office? As
no,
well?
I no. like in high school. Well, in high school, I'll try to skip some of the stuff I've already said for these guys. But in high school, I've already said this, but in high school, in my high school, there were two different high schools. One was a college prep school and one was just a regular high school. So somehow the blend of those two schools, like it was really cool to be super weird and smart on the wow. college prep side. Okay. And it was really cool to be like a jock or a cheerleader on the sort of regular high school side. Most of my friends, through high school were on the college prep side. So they were all like smart, nerdy Jews who were great at chess, but that was totally cool at that school. Or super goth, all loved The Cure, wrote a lot of poetry that was like too mature for any life experience they'd actually had.
Okay.
There was like a guy, I remember there was a guy who looked and dressed exactly like Robert Smith, and like he slit his wrists and came back to school and he had these black Frankenstein stitches on his wrists. And I know that this isn't cool, guys. Like don't do this to be cool. But like the girls were all, I mean, the girls that I hung out with that were like, we were sort of goth alternative girls, were totally fascinated by this like sad, sweet, hot guy who, you know, wow. I mean, like there's dark stuff going on there.
Right.
But
as a teen, there's something that is like, it, I don't know. Yeah. I hear you.
I mean, I'm ashamed to drop that. Like, and this guy slit his wrist, and we thought that was really cool. It wasn't that. It was just like he was already fascinating, and then that happened. You're like, oh God, what is this guy feeling? That's so deep and so intense,
right?
That he felt like he didn't want to be around, but he came out of it onto the other side and is still coming to school and just has these stitches. So because he didn't actually do, and I think it was more like a call for help,
sure,
kind of a situation, but But yeah, so there wasn't, I'm sure that that someone at my school would say, yeah, it was really devastating to me that I didn't get on the cheerleading team, but I was so far away from that. I literally never went to a single sporting event. I don't know how we were or how my school did or anything. I know nothing about that.
It's
nothing.
Funny. You mentioned Jewish kids. There were maybe two that I knew, one in my school and one of my middle or elementary schools.
Oh, wow.
The
Not
first
so
bagel I
Texas.
Had was when I went to the University of Florida.
That's
the first bagel.
Amazing.
I never had.
All of my friends were either Hispanic, black, or Jewish growing up.
Oh, And I ended up really having a thing for Jewish guys, and I'm married to a Jewish guy.
Yeah.
But what's funny is my favorite band growing up was the Cars, and I was especially in love with Elliot Easton. Oh, okay. I was in love with all of them, and I would dream about each one of them being my husband individually, but Elliot Easton is the one that would stick with me.
Wait, I don't know which one he is. Is he the one who sings Drive?
Guitarist.
Does he sing Drive?
No, that's Ben Orr. That's the late, great Ben Orr. But I found out his name is like Elliot Greenstein. I'm like, that's where it started.
There you go.
That's where it started.
Yeah, one of my first boyfriends was Eli Greenstein.
Oh.
Yeah. He went with Steen, not Stein.
Okay.
Eli Greenstein.
Okay.
Many a bar and bat mitzvah. Many a bar and bat mitzvah I went to. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, there weren't that many in poor Texas.
You know what? Texas is the poorer for it.
Right?
Texas is the poor for it.
Right.
I got to get into some games because I know that you're going to have a blast doing these.
Okay.
So I want to start with a cootie catcher fortune teller / chatterbox. Someone recently emailed me and said, this is also called a chatterbox.
I thought it was called cat's cradle.
No, that's different. That's the string, isn't it? The cat's cradle is when you play with the string.
You're right.
No one will be surprised to hear that. I love cat's cradles also. That whole, I need to do that soon. You know, where you do the string and then you like pull the string and pull it through.
Oh, that's what a cat's cradle. We had another thing for this, but I don't remember what it was called. Okay.
So
pick one of these.
Yeah.
Pink.
P-I-N-K. Now pick a number.
6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. One more number.
1.
And a final number.
7 is the first one I saw. Okay.
7. The question for 7 is, what is one thing from your childhood you held on to for too long?
Oh.
That's a good question. Brand new. Never been spoken. Didn't even know it was there. Victoria, just if you're listening, I want you to know that I haven't looked at any of these numbers in advance. So every time I say a new question, it's the first time that I have also heard it as well. That's a fun question. So it could be like a habit. It could be like a fixation with something. It could be an actual item that you didn't want to get rid of. It could be.
It's interesting because you're still
holding on to it.
I'm holding on to. Let me think. Or are you maybe a being angry about something?
Sure, it could be that too. It's a very open question.
I'm so sorry to take time, but I really wanted to be thoughtful about this.
I think it's a really interesting question. The first thing that pops in your mind is like, you go way, way back and you're like, did I have a blanket that like someone did, you know, tried to take away from me and like I wouldn't let them or whatever? But I'm also, I'm just wondering if there's something that I like emotionally held on to for too long or...
God, I'm so sorry. It's so funny. All this stuff is right at the top of my head, but not that.
I get it.
I'm like, does it have anything to do with my mom?
Yeah.
Maybe, or being left at the thing, but I already told that story. okay. This is just in the vein of the other stories.
Yeah.
But it's still there.
Yeah.
So it's worthy of answering that.
Yeah.
So I'm a senior, I'm a cheerleader, I'm on the student council, I'm on the newspaper staff, I'm doing drama, I'm a straight A student.
You're a busy gal.
And it's the homecoming. I've already blown it. The thing of the story is I didn't get it, but there was this girl, Kendall Crowley was her name. And she was 2 years younger than me, I believe. And she was in charge of putting the ballot together for the homecoming. And what they did was we had a court of 12 and then one would be elected queen. And it was kind of a cool thing. You got to walk on you got to change out of your cheerleading outfit and get a dress and walk with your father down during the homecoming festivities.
God, it was a big deal. I never went to a homecoming thing. I never went to a dance.
So I thought I had earned my... earn my spot.
Yeah.
I didn't think that. I knew it was going to be a long shot, honestly, because, we would make lists. My friend Jennifer and I would make lists of like, okay, who do we think is going to...
Wow.
Okay. And so there was a couple of wild cards and I thought I could get that wild. So the ballot that Kendall puts together is handwritten, None of the names are in alpha order. And there is a front and a back and a front. Like, there's multiple pages.
Oh my.
So you really have to give a shit.
Yeah.
To find, say, my name.
Yeah.
And I do believe, like, the first seven or eight names on the ballot ended up being the ones that, you know, got to be queen or got to be on the court. And then I remember, like, one girl wasn't on the ballot, so she redid it. But all she did was add that name to the third page or whatever. And... needless to say, I did not get on that court. But 2 years later, guess who gets elected homecoming queen? Kendall Crowley.
You definitely held on to this for too long. So right? Specific.
What kind of a doof?
Yeah.
Doesn't at least put them in alpha order. You're going to handwrite them? Fine.
Yeah.
Fine. We have typewriters. We have the technology.
It's sneaky. She's a sneak.
But... it's just, if you're going to do something half-assed, I'm going to, you know, be pissed about it.
Yeah. I love it. I love that you remember the fact that she created a list poorly and that has stuck with you.
Handwritten, not in alpha order. And I'm like, I had to look for my name.
That's fantastic.
And believe me, I wasn't one of those people like, oh, where's Christy? We'll put...
Yeah.
Like, I needed all the help I could get. Yeah. I was heavier. I was one of the heavier cheerleaders. I had perms. I mean, it was...
I'm excited to see all these pictures because I didn't really know what to picture. Okay, that's going to move us into our game of MASH.
Oh.
Also very exciting.
Oh my gosh, this is fun.
Okay, I got to think of some good categories for you, but I am going to start out with, I'm going to go in tradish. I got a good feeling about you and your answers for this game. So I'm going tradish with three men that you marry in this fictional world. All due respect to the delightful Gary Mann to whom you are married. This is a fictional world. Could be Donny Osmond.
Oh,
could be someone you have a crush on now. Could be Macklemore. Could be both of those people.
Definitely Macklemore.
Okay, we're putting Macklemore.
Definitely someone who has really kind of, I've thought of lately as sexy, but I can't explain why. And that is Willem Dafoe.
Interesting. Old wooden teeth Dafoe. I love Willem Dafoe, but he really has amazing, like, Abraham Lincoln wooden teeth.
Oh my God.
I love it. I love that he's on here.
I don't know what it's the hair when it's all. And... someone who I was in love with as a teenager, who I still crush on now, and have seen him out about in L.A. and was paralyzed with fear and couldn't take a picture, and my husband did, Rutger Hauer.
Oh, I love Rutger Hauer. Oh my God, I forgot about Rutger Hauer.
We were at Earth Cafe, and I walk in, I'm already tearing up.
I had a huge crush on him, too.
We walk in, and I go, like I could feel his presence. And there's an empty two-top right next to him. But I'm like, Gary, we cannot do this. You and I need to go as far away. My soul can't handle this. I can't handle this. So we did. And I could just every now and then look over at Rucker and check in. And then Gary and I left. And as he goes, I'll drive by. And if you want to take a picture. And I couldn't just turn and do this. So I would kind of do this. I'd hold my camera up and not look.
Yeah.
And,
hoping for the best.
And there was nothing. And so Gary did it. We'd swung around and Rutger was getting into his car, which happened to be parked right by where he was sitting. And so we have this great picture of him in his car. And Gary's trying to do the same thing where it's kind of askew.
Yeah.
And so it's this askew picture of Rutger. And I blew it up and I call it Rutger's Getting Away.
Oh, God, I want to see this. Too.
Okay, that is done. I can send that
to
you.
Okay, I got to write these down.
But those
control
three.
Control top.
Oh, yes, yes.
I think it was Rutger. Even in the yearbook. Cheerleading.
Oh, yeah. That's on my that's on my Twitter thing.
Okay.
Which, by the way, I hate Twitter because it's just like high school. And guess who's not even friends with me on Twitter? You, Janet Varney.
I didn't even know you were on Twitter because I'm terrible at Twitter.
Okay.
Follow Christy.
I don't even know why I am.
The people I follow
it makes me feel
are
terrible, always.
Pretty much somebody who sends me a tweet that says, please follow me. And then I'm like, okay. So I follow a bunch of like 5-year-old Avatar fans.
Okay.
Okay. I love these guys so very much. Okay. I would love to ask you for the city you live in. Wherever you live.
Encino, California.
Great. What else?
Oh, Austin.
I need three.
I would love to live in Austin.
Yeah, that's a great.
And with any of those gentlemen.
Great. Good. Because you'll get
for
one.
For an affair to remember.
And then a third one.
Paris, France.
Love it. So you just got back. Oh, this is a whole other conversation, but yes, you just got back from Paris for the first time. I would go with you anytime you ever want to just go back.
Oh, yes. Ditch your, let's do a girl ditch your where I can shop.
Husband and child.
Shop.
Oh, my
and
God.
By the way,
I will shop till the end of time in Paris.
I see the guys on, what's that show I just started watching? The Dukes of Melrose.
Mm-hmm. Never seen it.
Okay. Well, it's about these guys that work in like vintage.
Oh, that's what I do in Paris. Oh, is the vintage shopping is you have to, ridiculous. I don't even buy new stuff there because the vintage shop. Oh, I can't. Don't get me started.
Okay. And by the way, the cool kids say "weh" instead of "we."
What?
Weh. Like, I can't even.
Sometimes they say "we." They inhale. They suck in. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that? Yeah. That's my favorite because it's so weird. It's like, "weh." It's such a weird sound, but it's like cool over there. Yeah. What? Okay. Oh yeah, vintage. God, I got to come up with a vintage question. Can I tell you? I don't think I've ever said this on a podcast before, but this is how materialistic I am. But specifically about vintage, every few years, I will have a dream that I go into a vintage store that just is huge and just I want everything. Mm. And it's like a dream come true. And it's emotional for me because vintage is so specific because it's all one. I mean, of course, they're not one-offs. They weren't originally one-offs.
Right.
But the chances are it's a one-off. And I'm not talking about expensive vintage. I'm talking about like a $7 polyester dress. But I get so excited. I know. I mean, listen, I'm not fancy. I get so excited about the finds, like the, oh my God, I can't believe this is not that expensive. And it's, there's something so wonderful about this pattern or this fabric or whatever.
Right.
Those are like my most materialistic dreams aren't about like, I'm rich and I have all this money. It's about going to a vintage store and being like, but I love everything in here, but I can also afford to get a bunch of stuff in here because it's not expensive. And that to me is Paris. It's the closest thing I've ever come
to. Well, then we need to do a shopping thing because Gary was having none of it.
I'm sure he was having none of it. Bless his heart. Okay, so what fun vintage? Okay, so three vintage items that you wish that you could discover, like you could never get, or that you could have more of than one of, like that you could collect, like and sort of have
Chanel
whenever you
bag. Okay. Oh, that's such a good question. I'm going to really go thoughtful before I just say Chanel necklaces because I have one. Maybe a beautiful gown from the 50s from like Yves Saint Laurent.
Yeah.
And perhaps I'm like, well, maybe I'll put a shoe on there, but I really don't like vintage shoes.
I know vintage shoes are so painful.
What about a vintage, the record, the original, what are they called before they were records? They were called something else of, Sweet Georgia Brown.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, like not a 45, but like
there were these things that were heavier. And of course I can't even remember what it was called, but it was a heavier record. It was heavier and smaller than a 33, but bigger than a 45. But let's just say vintage version of Sweet Georgia Brown.
Love it. Love it. Okay. What else do I want to ask you? Cause it's so specific. Okay. Here's one, three bands.
Ooh.
That you wish could play for you on demand.
Dire Straits. The Bee Gees, All Living. And, oh gosh, my last spot. I mean, it'd have to be the Cars, just out of loyalty to them.
Love it. Love it. If you could bring back one TV show from the 80s, give me three.
Square Pegs.
Guys, by the way, for those of you who are too young to know, the Square Pegs was the first way that most of us met Sarah Jessica Parker, and she was could not be cuter.
Solid Gold. And the Captain and Tennille variety show.
Wow.
But that's really 70s, that last one, but I'm just going to stick with it.
Okay.
I'd love to see what they're up to now.
I love doing this era stuff. I'm going to try to bring in some of the younger listeners by getting a little more current. What about something from the 90s you wish had never existed? What if you could erase one thing from the 90s?
I'm going to say it because it brought my world to a halt.
Yeah.
No, I can't say it.
Why not? You think you're going to get guff for something that everyone else loves?
Yes.
Interesting.
And is a sacred cow, Kurt Cobain. But
oh yeah, I wasn't a huge Nirvana fan.
It just because the fun I was having as a young person all came to a halt, and it became heavy and serious, and I, you know, and then it became a joke to like Def Leppard or Van Halen, or right. And I'm like, you know what, guys, this ain't a joke.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say that.
So you don't want to get rid of grunge. Yeah, I getcha.
I recognize his brilliance.
I getcha.
Perhaps I'll say Eminem.
Okay, great.
Because I am no fan.
It
looks like a job for me, so everybody follow me. Need a little controversy, so it feels so empty without me. When you have a rhyme that three of the four words are the same word, you're not very good.
I see what you're saying. Okay. Okay. So Eminem doesn't have to be bands either. It could just be like a like oh, I hated wearing this, blah blah blah, or you know,
The baby doll dresses, mm-hmm. the shapeless,
the Courtney Love baby doll dress.
Baby doll dresses mm-hmm. that did nothing to flatter my.
Okay.
Post college.
One more
figure. Oh, what would I erase from the 90s? Thin eyebrows.
Oh, good call. It's funny. The person I think that's a really good one because and there's a person who is a very good specific celebrity to watch through the eras. To see really like when was good and when was bad for makeup, for hair, for eyebrows is Drew Barrymore. If you ever want a good, mm-hmm. listeners, if you ever want a good, like, what were girls doing? Like, what were the cute girls who were very on trend doing from the 80s all the way up through till now? She is the best example because she's been in the spotlight for such a long time and she was always very much of the moment.
Yes.
And the 90s to me, when I think about Drew in the 90s, yep. I think super thin eyebrows.
Yep.
Really pale face.
Yep.
Really dark vampire lipstick, mm-hmm. but like not balanced out with like any blush or anything. Mm-hmm. And like one single tone hair.
Okay.
Like two
and a
dark.
Barrettes,
definitely a barrette. Like
barrettes.
A twinkly barrette right by her. Sometimes I've been known to still have a barrette, but I like to put it further back.
But it's not the poodle ones. I still wore the poodle ones when I was in my 20s.
Yeah. Really good. Okay. Thin eyebrows. Oh, that's so good. Okay. And what about, God, I love all of these. I'm just coming up with because it's you specific. So I'm trying to think of another you specific thing that you would enjoy. What about a food that you could eat however much you wanted of forever, three, without it having any negative ramifications?
Lobster.
Whatsoever. Great.
Sushi. S'mores.
S'mores. And then, let's see, last but not least, what's a good final category? Song you wish you would have written. Song you wish you could take credit for because you love it so much. Three.
Oh, my gosh. That's good. Oh, that's good. okay, let me think of the class. I'm going to, just so you know, I'm not going to pick a Bob Dylan song because, you know, I'm very much a person that I'm going to like what I like and I don't care, you know, I don't care. There is a song by Dire Straits called Romeo and Juliet.
It's such a great song. That was like my song with my boyfriend when I was in high school.
And it, even though it was obviously written by adults for adults, I just remember like, oh, this is what it's like. You know, you love this person, but it's not, you know that this isn't, that person doesn't feel the same or whatever. You know that the tone of the song, even if you don't know the lyrics, is very like,
it's like wistful.
Yeah. And melancholy.
Yeah.
And, it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Oh, okay. Let me think. Because this is very good. I want to give it some thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I want to pick a song. Oh, let me think of who else do I love. I'm gonna say it.
Yeah.
It's still powerful to me today. It came out when I was a child,
mm-hmm.
so I don't want you to think I was disco dancing when I was. I think "Staying Alive" might be one of the best songs. It is a great, powerful song. It has an insane melody. It has an intense beat that just—I mean,
a great song.
If you put away the making fun of whatever, like the and then the where it was put in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And how the movie was Saturday Night Fever, and which was in the day, like I was a child, but my mom like snuck me in.
Yeah,
it was like people think these superhero movies are big and whatever.
Yeah,
but these songs were like there was a time when the Bee Gees the top 10 had 7 songs of theirs that yeah. they either wrote yeah. or recorded, and they were on they would be on the charts for over a year.
Yeah.
Like anyway, but that song still any time I need motivation, anytime I
get
like,
it. I totally get
and
it.
And I okay. All right, let me think. There has been a song just thinking about this time that came up on my shuffle. And of course I could probably name 100 of these, but there's a song called Birds of Paradise by the Pretenders.
Uh-huh.
Or is it Bird of... No, it's Birds. And
I do love the Pretenders. I'm embarrassed that I don't know
this
song.
It's on 2. It's on the second one. And it's very, like, it's about, again, I think about, like, young love that was doomed. And she has... I mean, the lyrics are fantastic. It has this yearningness to the melody. And, oh, it's just outstanding. I
gotta listen to it. I'm gonna listen to it when we get done because I do love the Pretenders.
It's really it will put you in a place, and she sings like once upon a time, like she's reminiscing about this guy, and like you know, you said nothing lasts forever. We were happy together, and I think you know, think about you in Stockholm and Rome, and you know, and clearly these. This couple is not together.
Yeah.
And, oh, you just gotta, yeah.
Okay, I'm
really
excited to hear
it. It's fantastic.
You know what I remembered? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to finish doing this and announce the MASH results at the very end of the podcast.
Okay.
I have one more thing that I want to do because I started flirting with the idea of doing a little advice section because I love, my guests are just, I just love how their brains work. And I'm so fortunate to have such wonderful ladies on the podcast. And so when I was podcasting Emily Gordon recently, I said, you know, if there were younger listeners out there that wanted to potentially ask questions, it doesn't have to be younger listeners. It could be anyone who's going through anything.
Mm.
Obviously, I guess the only thing I would say is you must love the podcast enough to think that you'll get a faithful and good response from a guest. But I think you're in good hands with Christy. So I'm not going to say who this person is. They'll know their question when they hear it. But it's the same person who suggested that the name this section would be called the Juniversity section.
Okay, I'm in.
Which sort of makes sense. And so she says that basically she's saying, okay, let me read this. Finding your path. I feel like I, along with my fellow peers, are in that stage in life where the crucial situation is, what am I doing with my life? Where am I going? Is this what I want to do? La, 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 la. For a long time, I was so confident that I was on the right path. And now due to so many complications, I constantly question my career. I'm a dreamer and a registered nurse. Registered nurse, is that what RN stands for? That's what I think of it as standing for.
Yeah.
Maybe it's what if I'm wrong. I'm currently getting my bachelor's of science in nursing. It's okay. Gotta be RN.
Yeah.
But I'm having such a hard time landing a good job. This has really hampered my progress. It's a long story. But anyway, does that mean I'm on the right path and I'm just going to have to be patient and persistent? Or is life telling me to go another direction and I shouldn't be banging my head against a wall?
That is really interesting. That's a very interesting question because I think when you are in your early 20s, and I know myself personally, I started out, I wanted to be an actress. I thought I was going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And with these other things I'd conquered the courtesy girls. Why couldn't this happen for me?
Right.
But then with the TV writing, I kind of followed that a little bit. And then the doors started to open and I started to kind of follow the open doors. And I found that, oh, this thing that I thought I wanted, I don't really want. There's this other thing that's not too far off from that, that gives me such pleasure doing, that I'm actually good at. And I think that, I think it's because there's so many like young people that get attention for being so successful, so young, that people who are young feel like I have to know now exactly where my road is leading. And I would say, just take a beat, take a breath, find what kind of things turn you on. Don't worry that it has to happen tomorrow. There is some of these girls I work with on Awkward who are in their 20s, but I started, I mean, I have a career, and I didn't start working on sitcoms till I was 30. When I would go home and have dinner with my friends, they were all married, they all had kids, and they would all pay for my, you know, dinner. And I'm like, gosh, I'm almost 30. I shouldn't have my friends thinking that I'm a charity case, and they didn't. I don't want to make it sound
of course, lovely,
but I think that time, no one warns you how difficult your early 20s is. And as much as I laugh about all the stuff with when I was young, I don't think it compares to when you're on your own and you have to make these decisions. And, I would say, as long as you are not spending money frivolously, mm-hmm. and not getting into habits that are, you know, taking drugs, that kind of thing, I think it's okay to like take classes or go on trips. Mm-hmm. I didn't travel at all when I was younger. I just didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't. And I couldn't afford it. But
I didn't do a lot of that myself in my 20s either. I was very concerned about just putting my pay. Like, I was, you know, going to school for a long time because I had to go part time because I was working full time. And I just, that felt like, I mean, on rare occasions, I would go somewhere, but I had friends who were like, next I'm going to blah, blah, blah. And they would do it on a shoestring budget. But
right. There are ways
I just
to
felt
do that.
Like, I can't focus on that too. I have to like just focus on what I'm doing in front of me.
Right. And the entertainment industry is very, you know, it kind of is all encompassing. But I would say, A, don't put too much pressure that it's going to, that your realization is going to happen within a month or a year, whatever. Yeah. B, follow open doors, but also with a kind of a guide that like, okay, this feels good. I like this. I like, you know, when I started, I was in this Warner Brothers TV writers program, and they still have it, some version of it. But I remember like, oh, I did well in this class, and then I got a job, and I'm like, this must be what my thing is, because I mean, and there's a lot of heartbreak and a lot of whatever that comes along with that. But I think, you know, the world of nursing is so specific, and my hat's off to anyone who does that.
I was thinking that too, because I was thinking like that. I like your idea of sort of going from points A to B to C and sort of looking at how a ripple effect could happen. Like maybe there's something in sports medicine, or maybe there's something in counseling. If you're helping people, maybe there's something, maybe it opens a door to like working, you know, potentially getting a degree. I mean,
teaching,
you're going to have your nursing degree.
Right.
Yeah. Teaching. Maybe you end up in, maybe you become an acupuncturist. Maybe you get into massage therapy, not necessarily as like a be all end all, but like while you're having trouble finding a very specific registered nursing job, maybe there is some help. Pathetic if like RN does not stand for that. I really apologize.
Well,
you can email me, my
school,
sweet.
So I'm sure that.
No, I think I said that. Didn't I say that? Or didn't I? I said that BSN I thought probably stood for nursing. If I'm wrong and that you are not saying RN is like a registered nurse, please tell me and we will adjust this accordingly. But regardless of what it is, there is that thing of sort of like, even in improv, we talk about going from A to C. Like you think that it's about one thing, but if that one thing isn't happening, to your point with acting and writing, it's like, what's on the periphery of that that doesn't even need to be a thing that you feel committed or devoted to, but that can kind of touch in with an element of what it intrigues you or what excites you or what you're passionate about with your degree.
Yes. And I think once you do find that thing that feels right and that, and the opportunities will surface and they will, you know, and I think that's what I'm understanding. A part of me is like, oh, does she want to get a job as a nurse and can't find one?
Yeah. She's having a really hard time landing a good job. And so she's just having problems being patient and wondering if, you know, she should be thinking that maybe this is like a sign that she's not supposed to be doing what she thinks she wants to do.
Got it. And I know, I mean, I went a long time with no auditions. Like, I know what it's like to like, okay, I've committed to this. I'm doing this. I've got my headshots. I've got this. And nothing's happening. Right. But then, you know, time passed. I got into the Acme Comedy Theater. I did that for a while. And sketch comedy was great because you have to create all these different, in 5 minutes you have to have characters and a conflict and a tone and all that.
Yeah.
But more than that, there were other people I was there with that were working in sitcoms.
Yeah.
And they were writing specs. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should try that. Maybe yeah. I can. And then, so being patient, it's the hardest thing when you're in, it's just being in your young 20s. It's
because
hard.
It's like,
hard.
Let yourself get, it's hard because you need a job and I know that you need to make a living, but give yourself permission to still be getting to know yourself.
Yes.
Give yourself permission to still be getting to know yourself. And so if you're feeling like you're unsure, it doesn't even have to be that life is telling you something or that the universe is telling you something. It can just be that this is an opportunity for you to not just listen to your gut, but also know that your gut might not know what it thinks yet.
Exactly.
Like, you might not have to be searching for this final gut feeling when that's a rough time to really know intrinsically what you're meant to be doing. Like, give yourself permission to not know and have that be okay and to be in a place, and this is something that is true for all of us in life at any moment, is to try to be comfortable being uncomfortable, which is so hard.
Yeah.
Comfortable being unsure, comfortable, as comfortable as you can be, like accepting of yourself that you're just not sure right now and that's okay.
Yes. And having new experiences, take a class or go to a thing or, you know, opening yourself up to the world to see what might come in and
maybe
and
it'll
stick.
Shift your perspective and it could either show you how much you really do feel passionate about that one thing and that you know that you can't let go of it, or it might change your perspective on that one thing and you'll see it evolve into something else.
Yes. And it's interesting, some of the very young girls I work with, like some people develop their voice very young. I was never a wunderkind. Like, I was never one of those people that was like great at something young, but my voice has really evolved. And when I go into a meeting and when I have I know like I got the goods and you know what I mean? You can take or leave me.
Yeah.
Whereas I would go and go like, oh my God, they're going to think I'm a fraud. But it took me time to develop that and time and experiences to kind of really have a white hot focus. And I remember there was a time in my 20s where I was like, yeah, I want to work in the entertainment industry. You know, I kind of want to be on Saturday Night Live, but I kind of want to write sitcoms. I kind of want to do this. I kind of want to.
Well,
but
at least
the second that I said, I want to create a show and run a show, then believe me, I haven't created and run a show yet.
Yeah.
And it's torture.
Yeah, I know, it's hard.
I'm kidding. But I've got things that are coming along the way that are helping to that goal as opposed to this diffused kind of, I'm not sure what I want.
And side note, just to reiterate this for those of you who listen to the podcast, you know this very well, but I didn't even think in my 20s, I didn't even think I wanted to do what I'm doing now. I was on a completely different track.
Okay.
So, I mean, if I thought I was going to be an interior designer and have like my own store and stuff, I couldn't be doing something further from that. And yet I feel totally comfortable in the life that I'm in now. But in a way, I feel like it could have worked out that way too. So that's the other thing too, is that you don't have to be so laser focused at that point, because it probably you're going to turn out doing something that you love if you're listening to yourself.
Yes.
That's great advice. Okay. I'm going to do this little thing where I tell you to tell me when to stop, which is tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Oh, that was really fast. I mean, technically, that's only three. Okay.
Well, should I do it again? I
like that it wasn't very long, but okay, we'll do one more. Okay, okay. Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. Okay, that's better. Okay. Okay, guys, I'm going to pause it. We'll be right back. Okay. There's one thing that I am a little disappointed by because I got excited about the possibility of it. I mean, you'll be perfectly happy with what you ended up with.
I'm giddy.
Okay, so what do I want to start with? I think the thing I'm going to start with is that I'm sure that this will raise a few eyebrows and anger a few people who are fans, but I have to tell you that in this new reality we've created, Eminem is not in existence. You have erased Eminem from the world. Some people would say, I being one of them, that he's an important influence and had some interesting things to say and an interesting story. A lot of drama with him and his wife. But at the end of the day, ultimately, I do find his raps to be very toe-tapping. Can I live without him? I don't have a choice. Now I have to. Now I have to. You have the power. So this is an Eminem free life. Everything else that you're about to hear. I invite you to celebrate the fact that you live in a lovely house in Encino, California.
Okay.
This very down to earth choice. Yep. That's what you ended up with. Secreted away somewhere very safe in that house is the original heavy record of Sweet Georgia Brown.
Okay.
So congratulations
Thank
for your ownership
you.
Of that.
It's worth probably $200.
so you'll buy $1,000 safe to keep mm-hmm. that safe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you could convince your friends Dire Straits to cover that song for you. But they will come and play for you whenever you like. And I'm sure they'll probably play more than one cover of your song, Romeo and Juliet, because we already know that they happen to have recorded that song you wrote and yeah. have made it famous.
Wow.
Since been covered by at least the Indigo Girls, memory serves. But the first people to cover your song were Dire Straits. You know, a lot of people think that they actually wrote that song,
I know,
but that's
isn't
not
that
the
funny?
Case. Sometimes when you aren't being entertained by Dire Straits, you turn on the television to watch one of my favorite shows as well, Square Pegs.
Okay, nice.
Very happy that's where Square Pegs came back around. And I can only assume that you're eating lobster while you're watching Square Pegs.
You know it.
All of this is happening with your spouse, Macklemore. So some good things have happened for you in this new life of yours in your house in Encino with Macklemore and his curly curls. His curly curls. Redundant, Janet. Redundant.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's your new future. Fun. This has been a complete pleasure. What fun we've had.
What a cool thing, Janet, that you do. This
thanks.
Is the coolest thing.
Thanks, Chesty.
Tell my buddy Dane. I say hello.
I think you and I need to start texting to find out what autocorrect turns Dana into, because maybe it'll be like Diner or like some weird Diana.
Okay.
And then we'll have a name. We'll have a fun inside joke name for Dana.
Perfect.
But in the meantime, I look forward to seeing you as often as possible in life, as we are friends.
We are friends.
And I look forward to buying that Anthropology dress and showing up wearing it the next time I see you, and you'll be wearing it too, and then everyone will make fun of us.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be in this company.
Well, now I'm just blushing, guys. We'll talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.